A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
We're back and full of chocolate eggs. It's the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Sorry that we didn't deliver you with a Easter egg special last week. We were too flipping busy, weren't we, David?
I wasn't busy.
No. Other people were busy. There were many holidays and we couldn't get it together, but fear not, we will recede back into time and bring you some news from the last couple of weeks on the Apple side of things, get a bit fruity on the Nintendo side of things, and also check out Facebook again. So we got Scott Carey, online editor of TechWorld. Scott, what year did you get Facebook?
Oh, first year of uni, so... Oh, that's pressure. 2007?
Okay, David Price, deputy editor of Macworld. What was your first ever Apple product?
Probably an iPod Nano, I think.
What colour?
White. Nice. I think it was only available in white and black at that point.
Vintage. And Dominic Preston, staff editor at Tech Advisor. What was your first Nintendo console?
Well, my sisters had the original. We had sort of a big grey Game Boy between a lot of us, but the first one that was properly mine was a red Game Boy Pocket.
Nice. I also own both of those Game Boys. It's the Nerd Factory. let's talk about tech. Cool. So, straight back in after Easter, Scott Carey, you've been covering Facebook's developer conference, which is called F8. I'm going to put you on the spot before I let you talk.
Again.
What's F8 stand for? Why is it called F8? I looked this up, so I actually know.
I actually don't know.
It doesn't mean fate. It's not talking about eight different things. It's because Facebook's hackathons legendarily last 8 hours.
Ah, like in the social network.
And they're all taking shots.
That's pretty much why it's called that, apparently.
Zuckerberg made a whole host of really nerdy jokes about how they should have seen the SEO problem coming on the horizon, that Fast and Furious 8, after Fast and Furious 7, they should have seen that F8 was going to steal their thunder. And funnily enough, they came out basically in the same week. So now if you Google F8, you get a lot of The Rock and Vin Diesel instead of nerdy.
Some would debate Facebook that's not developers. A bad thing.
No, I would debate that.
What does the F8 key do on a PC?
Oh, I don't know.
Ooh, God,
are you looking at me? I work for Macworld.
We should all be fired. We don't know any of these questions. Anyway.
Well, if it's the MacBook Pro, then they just have the touch bar.
Oh, just
wait your turn.
I had an answer for that.
Cool. So let's get to it. Scott, Facebook's developer conference took place last week, this week?
Yeah, this week. So it kicked off on Tuesday. I'm trying to make sure I'm getting my days right because the bank holiday is all out of whack. But yeah, Tuesday... morning their time, evening our time, and then it's a 2-day conference, so there's been a lot of announcements sort of overnight as well, recording this on Thursday. So they've announced a ton of things.
So much stuff.
They tend to announce a lot of stuff. They've announced so much, and you call it a developer conference, and it is a developer conference, but they also use it to announce a lot of their big sort of feature announcements, and they also use it as a way of road mapping where they're sort of going to take the company over the next year. They have like a 10-year roadmap, but so, for example, last year the big thing was VR and chatbots, and this year those have sort of fallen to the wayside a little bit. So F8 tends to show you sort of where they are in their thinking. While we're on chatbots, they announced that they're trying to solve the sort of discovery problem, which is sort of a big issue.
Discover that all chatbots are crap?
Exactly. and also they went really big on like trying to get people to use chatbots within Messenger, but there was no way to discover them. So they're adding a discovery tab And also there will be a piece of artificial intelligence within Messenger, which will, if you're speaking to your friend and saying, let's order a pizza, it will pop up and say, why don't you use the Domino's bot, which is horrendous.
Because there are some cases of this, for want of a better term, AI, within apps that I do understand, like when you're on, I don't know, you're on the train and using City Mapper, it'll go beep beep, get off here, or whatever. Okay, fine, slightly invasive. But then, personally, I find Messenger quite a horrible service to use.
It's horrendous.
I appreciate that it's really convenient. You don't need phone numbers. You can chat to everyone. They'll probably see it. But yeah, I find the platform horrible. Every time you cancel, like, your favourite people or the suggested games and stuff, it just pops up again a week later.
Yeah. I hate Facebook Messenger with a passion.
Yeah.
it seems to, like, I've got this OCD thing where I don't like having any, like, red blob notifications, and there's a constant one because, like, I won't give them my phone number or something.
Right.
And I just can't get rid of it. And
I mute a lot of group conversations and stuff. But anyway, I digress. What did they announce about Messenger?
Yeah. He just announced that it's Messenger, like, 2.0. So they're really keen to sort of get more people using bots and communicating with businesses directly on Messenger. It's a big sort of commercial push, really, more than anything for the user, in my opinion. There's a couple of things like chat extensions where you can start bringing bots into group chat. And the example they gave was if you and your mates are talking about booking a flight, you can actually talk to your mates, but then also ask the bot how much a flight to Budapest will be. And then you can compare that by saying, oh, actually, how much would a Lisbon flight be? And you can do it all in the same place. Kind of makes sense.
What happens if your mates all start talking to the bot and not talking to you? If it's better at conversation. Chatbot, an actual sort of conversation bot.
So a chatbot delivers your
good
friends.
Quality small talk.
It sounds like a really bad piece of fanfic, doesn't it? A chatbot stole my friends. By David Price.
Now I'm sad.
And they're also, they're still banging on about QR codes. They're still a thing.
I know, yeah. I wrote this down as part of, to pick up on. They were saying, if you go to a venue, we can give you like they use the example of the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
They'll have QR codes all over the venue. And you can, like, scan it with Facebook Messenger and you can get sent
and
out
the bot
nachos
will pop
or something.
Up and you can start, like, talking to it.
Nobody uses QR codes in this country, but I think they're big in Asia?
Yes, they are, yeah.
So it's not quite as bonkers as it sounds.
Fair enough.
I think for our audience, but no, you're correct,
I mean, they completely misunderstand QR codes, like, historically in this country. Like, they put them on underground posters and stuff. They just have no idea how they work.
On a billboard, Great help. And then also, you said it took slightly a backseat, but there was a AR, VR... side with Facebook Spaces.
So on the VR side, the big announcement was they've launched their first social VR product, and it's called Facebook Spaces, and it's kind of like a virtual chat room. It's a bit goofy, like you kind of create an avatar, and then you and your Facebook friend can, like, meet up in a chat room virtually with your Oculus on and, like, walk around and have a chat and sort of hang out.
Really,
so if anyone's nerdy enough to have read Ready Player One, there's a lot of Ready Player One scenes which take place in, like, chat rooms that people have invented, and then they're like private rooms and you can jump in using your avatar and go from there, really.
It reminded me a bit of that, what was that thing around the same time as, like, MSN Messenger? It began with an H and it was like a weird thing. We had like a little character and you could just go in to like a little word. It's a little bit Animal Crossing. It's called like Habby something or other.
All right. Yeah, I mean, Charlotte compared it to just called it a virtual version of First Life, Second Life.
Yeah.
Which it kind of is.
First Life.
Any
life.
Life.
That is my life.
I suppose that is what they're trying to do. They're trying to normalize all this like weird stuff. We sit in your front room with an Oculus on your face, taking a selfie of nothing.
But weirdly, VR took a backseat at F8 to AR. Zuckerberg was really, really big on augmented reality. And this sort of comes a couple of weeks after they launched Facebook Camera, which is their ripoff of Snapchat. So it's like face filters, augmented reality effects, things like that. And he said that, and he kind of took a dig at Snapchat here. He said that obviously the first step here is to use features that people understand, like a dog filter on your face, like you used to on Snapchat, you know, those sort of things. But he said what the main idea is to make an augmented reality platform on Facebook where people can create their own effects, their own filters, and start to personalize a lot of that and really normalize it and make it just the way that people communicate. Having those augmented reality features become way more common wherever you are, on Instagram, on Facebook. So Instagram stories, on Facebook, on WhatsApp, whatever you're doing, really, on one of the many Facebook platforms. And then he talked about some sort of pie in the sky ideas where you'd be sat in your living room and you'd have sort of your Facebook glasses on, and instead of buying a TV, you could rent a virtual reality, an augmented reality TV that would sit on your wall, and for like $1 an hour you could watch like pay-per-view on it, and you wouldn't need to buy a TV.
Just carry around your glasses.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that all these ideas are kind of like a bridge that we'll all look back on and think, oh, wasn't that quaint? Because I can see the appeal in some of the stuff like Facebook camera and all these, well, admittedly, filters for faces that I don't get. But one thing, this is Facebook has been predicting for a while, Zuckerberg's been saying that he can easily see by the end of this decade, Facebook would just be a video platform.
Yeah.
And I think normalizing how people communicate using video, I think that is changing and it could become a bit more standardized and a bit more socially acceptable.
Yeah, he said, I'll butcher the quote, but he said something along the lines of, photos and videos are becoming so integral to our platforms we want it to be where the text box used to be. So he literally sees video and photo as being the primary mode of communicating rather than text going forward. And the way that they want to make the most of that is by building features on top of the camera. So he wants like the Facebook camera to be the augmented reality platform.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've built this thing called Camera Effects Platform, which is basically a developer studio. So you can go in there and you probably don't even need to be a like really like hot developer. You probably can be just like a teenager, and you'll see teenagers in their bedrooms creating their own filters and stuff going forward.
Will they do a filter for naked pictures?
Or like putting pants on you?
Well, yes. I mean, like, what's it called? Trick pics.
Giving you a massive wang.
Yeah. Or hide your massive wang. Oh, more usefully.
Whichever.
This is what I wanted to talk about in this podcast.
You were dying to bring this in, weren't you?
Pornhub's new photo filter. Is it called? I can't remember the name. Trick pics. It's like dick pics, but it covers your wang.
Trick.
With like a cartoon picture.
But who wants that? Avocado. Why would you? Doesn't that defeat the whole point of a dick pic?
I don't know what the point of a dick pic
is. Well, I'm not an expert, really, but I feel like the dick is kind of integral. And if you're...
Well, we need to bring Ashley Cole into this. Or Vernon Kay.
Those are very out-of-date references.
No, they were the last big dick pic scandals, weren't they?
Were they? I think any dick pic is a scandal.
Or Anthony Weiner.
Yeah, Weiner.
Yeah.
And that was particularly good because of his name. Anyway,
so that was all the big augmented reality, virtual reality announcements.
What about typing with your brain?
Yeah, so as we're on out there ideas, basically last year Facebook announced that Zuckerberg announced that Facebook was building this new unit called Building 8, and it was going to be headed up by I can't remember her first name, but Duggan. She came from Google, and it was going to be concentrating on like hardware. And sort of a little bit more like moonshot ideas for the company. And now, 1 year on, we finally get to like sort of a peek at what they've been working on in that like specialized unit. And they're built like a 360 VR camera.
Yeah.
So that's the first piece of hardware that Facebook have ever produced. But then more out there is they've been working on this thing that they call the brain computer interface, where you can, in theory, type using just your brain. So they believe that they can use optical imaging scans. So they'll scan your brain 100 times a second, and then by looking at the activity of a certain area of the brain, it can translate what you're thinking into text on a screen. So you can type 100 words a minute without touching a keyboard.
That sounds utterly terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to transcribe what I'm thinking.
Yes.
Don't want to use that at the same time you posted dick pic. That's mad.
Yeah, insane. So, like, Elon Musk this week has been talking about something called Neural Lace. And we've read about it.
It sounds like a sex robot strip club.
Yeah. It does. It actually sounds like the strip club in, like, Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Would be called Neural Lace.
Yeah.
Let's all go there now. Let's
But Neural Lace, you actually have to like implant like a something on top of your brain. So it's an invasive procedure which would then be able to take what's happening in your brain and translate it into computer language. But Facebook is saying it's not invasive.
Why does the one have to be invasive and not the other?
It's just different technologies. I have no idea. Like, and Matthew just asked me, he was like, how does like, how does the optical scan know what the words you're thinking are? And I was like, this is above my pay grade.
That's mad. That's a step above, because I found it weird when I found out some people get NFC chips implanted in their palms.
Yeah.
You can program them to, like, be your bank card or whatever.
Do the Oyster thing using your palm.
That's still horrible.
I always think that's weird, because you could just wear a smartwatch. You know,
use a card like everyone else.
You look like less of a twat than if you wore a smartwatch, though.
Are we going to start that off?
No,
I forbid it. Every time.
Scott's not a fan of the Apple Watch. That was the out there stuff.
There was a lot of boring developer announcements. They're doing like more community stuff around like developers. It's basically a way of rebranding Facebook groups, but for developers.
Right.
I think it's kind of their push into like diversity issues, to be honest, but whatever. They've open sourced a load of stuff, like their Places database, so you can like start building some pretty cool place-specific apps using their stuff. And they've open sourced a load of other stuff anyway.
Are they going to change the outcome of the general election?
No, so he didn't talk about fake news. But he did,
says you in the media, so, so maybe he did.
he did make sort of one current affairs statement where he directly talked about the recent shooting in Cleveland. So for context, there was a incident in Cleveland where a man shot someone and then uploaded it to Facebook video.
I think it was on Facebook Live, wasn't it? He did it all.
Yeah, I can't quite work out whether it was Facebook Live or whether he uploaded it after the event. But there's obviously a massive issue with violent, sexually like explicit content and stuff taking over from Facebook's video platform, which is always going to happen. And Facebook haven't been particularly good at censoring this stuff. So it was expected that Zuck might say something about it. And he said, our next focus is building community. We've always done a lot to help people share and get a diversity of opinions out there. But now, in addition, we're going to work hard on building common ground and not just putting more opinions out there, but also bringing people closer together. That means nothing.
No, it doesn't mean anything.
It means absolutely nothing. He basically didn't talk about building any specific censoring tools or anything like that. He said, we've got a full roadmap of products to help build groups and community and more informed society and help our community safe. But he said, we have a lot more to do here, and we're reminded of that this week by the tragedy in Cleveland. We'll keep doing all we can to prevent tragedies like this from happening.
You can't stop people killing people.
Exactly.
But also, I think you've got to maybe face up to the fact that once you connect the entire planet with one product, as they're basically doing, you can't police it.
You get all sides. Yeah, you get all sides. You get the dirty side, you get the nice side. Yeah. And obviously that poses a huge PR problem for Facebook. I think there's a big difference between confronting the problem and actually doing something about it. And at the moment, it looks like they're just paying lip service and basically saying, yeah, we're aware of the problem, we want to try and do something about it, rather than actually coming out and saying, okay, we have got a team of 100 people trying to work out how to make sure that this stuff doesn't get in front of people, because people don't want to see it, and it shouldn't be on the platform if we want to keep it like a place where people can safely like go and share stuff and view stuff. So I think
it's part of the issue that not enough people reported it, that people just saw it on their feed, scroll past, maybe didn't think it was real, I don't know. But
yeah,
if because it was up there for like multiple hours.
Yeah.
If people had seen it and immediately gone, this is shocking content, can you take it down, please?
I'm not sure that a community should be responsible for policing itself. I think that the platform itself should have some inbuilt controls. Yeah. And I think that's where Facebook and Twitter have been really poor. It'll be interesting to see if later on, because this is, you know, it's a really fresh tragedy and they had to say something about it. And it'd be interesting to see if later on they actually start coming out with some practical measures to try and deal with this stuff. But at the moment they haven't, so we will have to see.
Cool. Thanks for the roundup, Scott. As is tradition, Scott, F8 or 2000 and late?
2000 and late.
Dominic Preston.
I don't know what that means.
2000 and late as well.
The negative one?
It's bad, I guess.
Fergie said it once. From Black Eyed Peas, not Alex Ferguson.
Right. What was the first one?
F8.
Sorry, this is rubbish.
Or 2000.
F8, yeah, I'll say F8. Good old Zuckerberg.
Cool.
Yeah,
good. Excellent. We'll come right back and talk about Max. David Price with your white iPod Nano. What has been going on?
I've still got the iPod Nano.
Oh, it's a shame. It's quite good, wasn't it?
I was a bit thrown off by the informal start of the podcast today.
Sorry, we're just a chilled out, relaxed bunch of cool dudes.
Being chilled out is upsetting to me.
This happened a little while ago, which will probably also unsettle you. Back at the beginning of April, Phil Schiller and Craig Federighi got a bunch of journos together, didn't they? And they said they'd done a bad.
Yeah, well, not a very big bunch either.
No.
Five journalists in a room, almost outnumbered by the Apple executives. And they basically said to them that the Mac Pro didn't use these words, but it was a flop, it was a mistake. Things went wrong.
Schiller said, "We're in the process of completely rethinking the Mac Pro." And just to obviously not insulting the listener's intelligence here, but this is the cylindrical Pro
trash can
desktop thing that doesn't come with a monitor or anything. Not the MacBook Pro that we're talking about here.
No, the Mac Pro, the second gen Mac Pro released in 2013, which has had almost nothing done to it since then.
Apart from having a £500 price increase.
Yeah, it got hit really bad. In the Brexit
by
price.
The Brexit,
yeah.
So this is odd. This is Apple mid product cycle, months before they would normally unveil something, and then it will be on a stage. They've said to some people and the rest of the world now, we kind of got that a little bit wrong. We're working on it.
Yeah, so it's not going to come out for ages.
It's really unlike them. Why have they done it?
It is because I think there's multiple reasons. They were getting a lot of flack in the press and from Apple fans saying that they're giving up on the Mac. So people are just sort of moving off the pro users. I was just talking to the editor of Digital Arts, and he was saying that the pro community have pretty much moved off the Mac Pro, in fact, and they're a lot of them on PCs, which seems bizarre to me.
Or just an iMac.
Or just an iMac, or in some cases, the MacBook Pro. But when the MacBook Pro came out in autumn, the one with the touch bar that we were talking about earlier. A lot of pro users said that wasn't good enough for them because it had a maximum of 16 gigabytes of RAM. It hasn't got cable 8 processors. It's just not as powerful.
And it costs as much as a house.
yeah, it really does. So there is a theory that in response to that, they decided, maybe we should rethink the Mac Pro. And for that reason, they've only been doing it for a few months. It's going to be a long time before the Mac Pro comes out. They specified that the new Mac Pro won't come out this year, but based on that theory, it might not be till 2019 we get the new Mac Pro.
That's pretty rubbish, having 6 years between something that's professionals would probably want to upgrade debatably more often than a regular consumer.
Yes.
And on reflection, I think you pointed this out earlier to me, that the Mac Mini, which is just sold as a hard drive basically on its own with everything inside, but you have to have the monitor and the keyboard. That makes sense to sell just on its own. But a £3,000 professional product like that, not coming with a monitor, isn't it?
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
a bit backwards.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's possible that you might already have the display.
Sure.
Being sort of modular does make sense in a lot of senses, if that works. And they are going to release a display alongside the new Mac Pro, which is...
This is something they confirmed, is it?
Yeah, they did. They're going to do a new Pro display, but it won't be a touchscreen display.
Okay, so not like the Surface Studio.
No. Oh, and so there's all these rivals coming in and basically eating their lunch, and they're getting a bit worried. But they, yeah, as you said, they wouldn't normally announce this stuff so far ahead. There's this thing that I was reading about called the Osborne effect, which has caught out a few companies, where you announce a product and then immediately everybody stops buying the existing product, you know, which makes sense because it's going to be replaced.
Yeah.
And they're doing this potentially, you know, 18 months ahead of the product coming out. The reason they don't care is because nobody's buying the Mac Pro. So they're going to lose, you know, zero sales from doing this.
Is it also really unusual for them to admit fault?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you remember when the iPhone 4 had a problem with the antenna?
Yeah,
and Steve Jobs replied to an email and said that the guy that was losing phone calls on his phone, he said he was holding it wrong.
They did
eventually sort of admit culpability and let people have little bumpers to go around them. So they do say this, and they have become more of a sort of humble company under Tim Cook. So this is more his sort of line of thinking. But I think they like the idea, as do most companies, of saying, here's our new product, you can buy it really soon. You can start pre-ordering now. The idea of just turning up and saying, well, we're going to do something, and then it doesn't come out for another 9 months, 18 months, is just a bit crap.
I read a good piece on it. I can't remember where I read it, so I won't pretend this was my idea. But I agreed with it. And it was that this is perhaps a sign that Apple is finally feeling the heat of being... The leading light in...
I thought you were going to say feeling the heat of our ferocious...
No.
Chat.
Feel our ferocious heat.
Feel our ferocious heat.
No. It was saying that they've always, all their major successes have been when they've been on the back foot.
That's true.
Yeah, the colourful iMac, when Steve Jobs came back, that was like, bam, screw you, PC. And then the iPhone was just like, absolutely killed BlackBerry and everything. And now that they've addressed the pro market, they've taken it too wide. They've tried to say this is for scientists, for designers, for engineers, and then not really like focused properly. And now they're like saying, oh, they don't mind admitting that other people are doing it better, basically.
It's true.
And
it's
they haven't defined that category of computers.
But that is a key point, is that the pro category, and they kept on emphasizing this, was that the pro category is huge and not you can't get one product that addresses all of those people just as well. So they're basically saying that a lot of pro users are happy with the iMac or the MacBook Pro, and will continue to be, but that this is aimed at a different class of pro user, people that are doing like VR stuff, or, you know, some of the anything that just requires a very powerful GPU, essentially. Because the fundamental flaw with the Mac Pro was it was designed in this specific triangular chassis, which has heat problems. It has thermal issues if you put in more than one GPU. If you put in a particularly powerful GPU. So they thought that everybody was going to start using dual GPU setups, both with good heat conservation. But instead, the market went the other way and people just started sticking in one very powerful GPU. And you can't do that in that configuration. The essential hardware design doesn't allow you to do that. So essentially it became unupgradable. And if you don't release a new model for 6 years, as you said, then people are going to start thinking, well, my GPU is not powerful enough and I need to put in a new one, but I can't put in a more powerful one because it's stuck as a dual GPU setup, so what's the point?
And you mentioned the Touch Bar Mac Pro that some people have not come to kindly. Part of the reason for that was that they consider it underpowered.
Yeah.
So is the MacBook Pro, having that Pro thing attached, is that now slightly misleading, or has the industry outgrown that machine's capabilities?
Well, as you said, the Pro market is a wide one, and a lot of people, I think they said in the discussion, like 15% of Mac users use at least one Pro app each week. So a lot of people regard themselves as Pro users, but don't necessarily require the absolute most powerful machine. And for those people, the MacBook Pro is a really nice looking, portable, cool laptop that is fairly powerful.
Yeah.
But it's not really powerful enough for the absolute top tier.
Because what the other thing you alluded to there, it's a nice looking machine. The Mac Pro wasn't a bastion of Apple design, was it? It was a strange...
The trash can.
Yeah.
I love the design. I think they were really proud of it, actually. I think, if anything, the problem was that they let... Which round is it? They let form lead function rather than the other way around.
Mm. I actually think it's quite nice as well.
It's designed to be on display. You remember the first Gen Mac Pro, which is the tower, that sort of... you lift it up onto your desk, it weighs a ton, and it didn't look very nice at all. I mean, it looked better than most of the other towers out there, but this was a real step forward, and they were really proud of it when they released it. And Phil Schiller said, "Can't innovate my ass," when he put it on stage.
Did unscripted? I think he got a slap wrist for that.
Was it unscripted? I didn't know.
It was unscripted.
That's brilliant. I thought it was a really nice design, but it was a misprediction. It was a miscalculation of where the industry was going to go, and they just assumed everyone would get dual GPU setups, and they haven't. And they've been stuck with this thing for years, and it's been a sort of an embarrassment of, when were they going to acknowledge that this is not a product that works, and we're going to deal with it. And I think that's what they wanted to do now, was to acknowledge that and let people know they're going in a different direction.
How important do you think the PR, but also just the design of the general product around the inevitable now Mac Pro will be, because Apple undoubtedly has dined out on its design prowess for years. People bought an iMac back in 1998, even if they didn't need one, just because it looked amazing, right?
Yeah.
And to an extent, that's what people did with the iPhone 6, the iPhone 4 before that. It's just like this amazing item.
Yeah.
Did they design the Mac Pro slightly differently because that kind of marketing doesn't appeal to pro users? They just want specs, or are we going to see an amazing new desktop come out?
I think they will be more cautious about letting design lead the way in the next one. Like, for example, the port situation. They're quite keen on just getting rid of all the ports so they can make it look nice, a bit more minimalist, make it thinner. I don't think that will necessarily be the case for the new Mac Pro. I think it will have a lot of USB-C and, what do you call it, USB-A? Normal USB.
Should be. Hopefully USB-A on there,
There'll be a lot of ports like that, so it won't look quite as sleek. Nowhere near as sleek as the MacBook Pro. But it's still Apple. You know, they're still going to want to make it look nice. They had this weird thing back in the day where they would design the inside of their Macs in such a way that when you open it up, you still think, oh, it looks nice in here. Which is like the number of people that would see that is so small.
Yeah.
But they have this obsession with it. Steve Jobs used to talk about how he read about furniture designers that would make the back of tables and stuff that was going to be against a wall just as nice as the rest of it, because they would know it was there. It's a weird sort of philosophy.
Yeah, but even their like out of the box experience was always like designed in a way that was nice, even though that experience is like 10 seconds and then you throw it away.
It's part of the product.
Yeah.
Yeah, going into the Apple store is part of the product. The whole experience is you're buying being an Apple customer, you're not just buying the product.
It's amazing though, isn't it? I bought a PC before, like a laptop, and it just comes in like a weird cardboard throwaway thing, and it's just not the same.
No.
You can just consider an Apple product just above everything else. Not necessarily in terms of function, but in terms of form. You can't really argue with that.
They're so lovely to you. but this is a bit of a cock up.
Yeah, but I quite like the new Apple mark, whatever they are now. because you would never have seen Jobs doing this. He would have, as you alluded to, sent a snarky email to some poor customer who just wanted an answer. And no doubt he was the whole reason for this company's existence, but it's nice to see them just saying, yeah, this is what we're doing now. Because every other company tells you what's going on.
Do they...
Well, maybe not, but maybe no one cares. People care about Apple, and they've told people what they want to hear, even if they didn't want the situation in the first place.
Well, at the very least, this is going to plump up some sort of wounded egos in the pro community. People just thought they were being neglected. And you know, it's fair enough, because they spent that much money on Apple products.
I always find that entitlement to attention, though, slightly weird. It's like, why won't you make it? You've not looked at the Mac Pro for 1,000 days. Like, who gives a shit? I mean, in my opinion. You know, these upgrade cycles. Like, well, you have a phone.
But if you get onto a platform, then you buy the software library around it, and there is an assumption that you will then be supported. You know, if you buy a load of Mac Pros for your design studio, for example, and then you start needing to replace them, then switching over to be a part Windows, part Mac OS shop is going to be more difficult, and you should be sort of... I think there is an element of loyalty required in that situation. But I know what you mean.
I'd probably also personify the problem because I clearly don't understand. It's people like me who ruin the Mac Pro for everyone. We've run out of time, but David Price, iMac or iCac?
No, I don't know. iMac. Yeah, iMac.
Scott Carey?
iMac.
Dominic Preston?
iCac.
Yeah. Don't like it. Right. We'll be straight back after this for your post-Easter pod with some talk about Nintendo. Don Preston, so we've chatted a lot recently about the Nintendo Switch, why it's good, why it's run out of stock, why everyone loves it, and why there's no games. But to sidestep that for a moment, there was a little machine which we've also discussed on the pod called the NES Classic, which was a £50 plug-in to your TV device that played 30 classic NES games.
Yep.
Why have they stopped making it? It's gone.
Yeah, it was one of the more surprising moves in a while. I mean, it was a huge hit last Christmas. They sold 1.5 million of the things. And then they announced this week that they just discontinued the product and they weren't going to make anymore, even though it's been out of stock ever since it hit shelves. People have still been struggling to get hold of them and were expecting, you know, Nintendo to be ramping up production to try and meet demand that was obviously still there. And so there's a lot of questions immediately following that, and people sort of thinking, well, is this because they've got something else at their sleeves, or is it just that they want the focus to go back to the Switch? Because they'd always said the NES Mini was kind of a one-off little fun thing. I think it was a bigger hit than Nintendo ever expected it to be. And really, a lot of what it looked like was so that they had something that would sell last Christmas at a stage where there weren't any particularly big 3DS titles, the Wii U was dead in the water, and the Switch was still a few months off.
Because even though these games are 20, 30 years old, or however old the NES is, you're still getting 30 games for £50.
Yeah.
And do you think perhaps because these games were available on the Nintendo eStore that they actually realised that they were losing money?
Well, that's a lot of the wonder. Nintendo's made a big point of, it's always, it's a bit of an unkind term, but milked its back catalogue for everything it's worth.
It does.
And so its console, since the Wii, you've been able to buy old NES and SNES titles, and they've been sort of increasing that with every console since. The Switch doesn't have an eShop yet. There will be one on the way eventually. It's just one of those other bits they just didn't have ready for launch. But yeah, so again, part of the speculation was, well, maybe they wanted to stop selling the NES Mini to make sure people were interested in buying eShop games on the Switch whenever that arrives. There's also still sort of question marks over whether they're going to honour people's past purchases. Nintendo being a bit bad on that in the past, about your purchases carrying through between the platforms. So there's a chance you might have, you know, bought the original Mario Brothers on the Wii or the Wii U and be told, well, you owned it for that platform. If you want to play it on the Switch, you've got to buy it again.
Oh, that's terrible. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Yeah, they can be like that. I think everyone's sort of rooting for them to sort that out this time. They're being better about company-wide accounts, like user accounts now, so they should figure that out. But the most compelling reason for why they discontinued it was one that has since been not confirmed, but rumours speculated that they're just following it up with the SNES Mini, which was the really obvious thing to do. And basically it's just they only have so much production capacity, so they had to stop making NESes so they could start making SNESes.
quote of the week there. Dave and Scott, have you played the NES Classic?
I mean, I had a NES Classic, but I haven't played the new...
The mini one. We got this over there.
Saw it.
It's in that box. Yeah. I think it's in there, unless Chris has nicked it. But we should crack it out again, because it is really fun. And for £50, you can literally, as you can see by that upside-down picture, hold it in your hand.
Rather of a SNES, though. I think this is good.
Yeah.
SNES was
my generation, that's
great.
What I was really into.
I think the gap between the NES and the SNES was one of the bigger gaps in terms of the quality of games.
Yeah.
The NES was very arcadey, whereas the SNES felt more console. So I think that's a fair move.
That would be the big difference. Just the games library for the SNES is such a huge improvement over the NES. And the NES has a lot of games, you know, anecdotally, when you talk to people who have the NES Mini, what they generally say is, yeah, it was great fun for a few hours.
Yeah, it's very nostalgia. Yeah. Whereas the SNES, actually, I think they are still good games.
Exactly.
Also, I think the NES playing some of that on modern huge TVs looks a bit...
It looks pretty ropey.
Yeah.
And they're the kind of games that, like Scott said, they're very arcadey. So they're really great for playing a few rounds, but...
Yeah,
they're really hard games to play now. You go back and you play and you think, I know this was an amazing game when it came out 30 years ago, but it's hard to go back and play the first Zelda because it's it's a bit rubbish now. It doesn't really hold up. Whereas no, as soon as you make the leap to the snares, like the A Link to the Past, as everyone says, it does hold up. That's a fantastic game. I played it again last year.
50 quid and you got four people playing Mario Kart.
Yeah, yeah. The first Mario Kart for the snares. Best Zelda games. You've got all the sort of big, there are quite a few big Final Fantasy games on the snares, up through six. Chrono Trigger and Secret of Mana, other big RPGs. You've got Super Metroid, you've got Star Fox.
Street Fighter.
Street Fighter 2. So yeah, Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat 2.
And this is the thing, because I've got a 3DS, and I looked on the eStore when it took me bloody ages to log in, because it's a terrible user experience. But yeah, you look and you think, oh, maybe I'll buy the old Metroid game or something. They could be about £7 or £8.
Yeah.
And you kind of think, oh, do I want to pay that? When a 3DS game costs, at least £30?
Yeah.
So I kind of myself didn't do that. But now, yeah, if you get 30 games like you did with the NES for £50.
Yeah, if they can hit the same price point, it will be just a massive value increase, because they are the kind of games you'll stick with, you'll want to play. There are longer games.
Hmm.
Could you save files on the NES Classic?
Yeah, so it that was one of the big improvements. It did have a totally modern save system, so you could just save as you went and overcome that big frustration.
Don't just pause it for 4 months.
Yeah.
That
was a memory card on SNES, actually, wasn't it?
No, it all saved onto cartridge, didn't it?
Yeah, the game cart themselves saved. Yeah.
I remember on the SNES, though, I think you had to have a battery in the cart to save. So, like, Mario All-Stars was heavier cart because it had a battery but most games Cannon Fodder, you had to just write down a code.
Yeah, there was a lot of that
level of stuff. Remember the Rumble Pack for the N64?
Yeah, terrible.
But great.
Yeah.
I love all these, hilarious workarounds for these sort of problems.
I remember, the memory card, crisis that would happen with PlayStation, where you'd take memory cards around to mates' houses and you'd have to label them you'd have your save games on there for whatever.
Siblings deleting save files to get back at you.
Yeah, I definitely lost some Grand Theft Auto save files.
Some hours of
killed someone.
Your world.
That would be PS2, actually, wouldn't it?
Probably.
They were still memory cards.
Yeah, yep. PS2, GameCube was all memory card. Yeah. It got me to thinking as well, what are the other tech products that have just been famously discontinued before people wanted them to be? There was two that stuck out. One was around for 3 years, but still I always remember it as didn't fulfill its potential, was the Dreamcast.
Yeah.
1998 to 2001.
But I mean, that was first discontinued and more Sega stopped being a functioning hardware company.
I know. But still, I mean, it was, and then you look at the PS2, which came out 2 years after that, but then wasn't put out of production completely, the PS2, till 2013.
They were making PS2s for years.
That's insane.
That was an amazingly successful product.
And they talked about, there was always talk at Sony about having backdated games on the PS3, and it never kind of happened.
Yeah.
They said that a lot of your old game files and stuff would still be available for the PS3, and that would be the reason why you would upgrade, because you could have it all in one place. Going back to Sony, the Mega Drive is one of the great all-time consoles.
Like Sega.
Yeah. And that's one that I would like to get my hands back on.
Yeah, Sega should get on the Nintendo Mega Drive Mini. Whatever.
There's a few games on the Mega Drive Mini that I would definitely pick up.
Yeah, I remember playing, I can't remember what it's called, there's a top-down football game on the Mega Drive, which is amazing.
There was a good boxing game. There were good WWE games, actually, on Mega Drive. And WWF at the time.
Yeah, very true. Not the Panda. And the other one that I thought of, which I've never actually used, was another Nintendo one, the Nintendo Virtual Boy.
Oh my God, what is that?
Do you remember this?
That was early VR. Very early VR.
Early VR. So it looks like kind of some sort of, I always think it looks like a weird kind of alien spider, because it's like it's a red unit which you put over your eyes, and then this controller, I think it dangles down from the headset, so you have a controller placed in front of you. And
it was called
the Virtual Boy, but it was more like AR, and it was like you put it on and it could only display the color red.
Yeah.
And it was only in production for 6 months before they cancelled it, because they were like, oh shit, it's 1995. We've invented something that doesn't exist yet. But Google it if you don't know. And
I'm gonna look at that.
They got past that because that was a couple of years before the Game Boy Color, which was pretty successful. Mm.
And they had the N64 around then, which was a big. But yeah, no, I mean, the Virtual Boy is an interesting one. It's one of the reasons I think a lot of people are looking at Nintendo hasn't gone near VR yet in terms of its gaming, and there are a few reasons.
There's some scars.
But reluctance around the Virtual Boy has got to be part of it, because it is famously the biggest ever flop, and it was a disaster, and it gave people headaches and made them sick, and it was all red. Everything was red. Why would you make that? they've kind of got to prove that they can do VR and it not be absolutely unbearably awful.
Maybe they missed the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
All that red. And then the one thing just to finish off Bumper Edition, that was games console that's been discontinued because everyone loved it. It also made me think, not quite the same, but about technology, something that and really annoys me is planned obsolescence in tech.
Hmm.
Not quite the same, but I was thinking, yeah, they've cancelled that after less than a year. But also, we replace our phones every 1 or 2 years.
We shouldn't.
We really shouldn't.
Yeah.
No. I know we're sport here by getting samples and everything in, but I mean, most people don't want to get rid of their phone after 2 years. Why companies, how have they got away with it?
it's a triumph of marketing, I suppose. They've been working away at that itch for like 50 years, the idea that new is good and that it's natural for things to be replaced before they actually wear out.
Yeah.
An iPhone does not need to be replaced every year, but for a lot of people it is. You know, and they've got that new program that means you pay a certain recurring fee and then you just get one every year, which is even pushing it even further.
Yeah, Samsung, the S8, actually, as we record, comes out today. It might be delivered if you pre-ordered it, but they are doing a payment program through Sky, which it looks... So this is Sky's bad, not necessarily Samsung's. It looks like you're getting a great deal because you pay 30 quid a month just for the handset and it's yours. And you're like, wow, that's amazing. But if you actually look at it, you are signed up to pay for at least, I think it's something like at least 24 months payment. And then at the end of it, you have to give it back.
What?
It's like a £30 a month rental of a handset.
No.
So you end up paying 900 quid over 2 years and then you just give it back. Don't do that if you're a Sky customer. It's terrible.
That's shocking.
So that's slightly different, but basically everything is crap now.
We are destroying the environment with our ridiculous electronic trinkets.
Yeah.
That's probably not the right
attitude.
We'll
be dead before that's a problem, isn't it?
I'm not sure we will.
True. No.
We might be dead because that's a problem. It's not quite the same.
Skynet and all that. Well, I've veered slightly off topic there, but thanks for this summing up of that, Dom. And if the SNES Classic does crop up, everyone, buy it immediately. So, Dominic Preston, Nintendo Entertainment System or now everything sucks?
Nintendo Entertainment System.
Scott Carey.
Yeah, Nintendo Entertainment System.
David Price.
Nintendo Entertainment System.
Nintendo Entertainment System. Thank you for listening to our two-week catch-up on the UK Tech Weekly podcast. We promise we'll be back next week. Thank you, everyone. Say goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.